Okay, today. Wow, we have humans here today again. Cool. First thing I just wanted to suggest, one nice thing about Jackson is there are a lot of problems where the solutions are actually written in the problem, and you can just see if you can do them, if you can reproduce those things, solve those problems, or I mean, you can use AI to solve the problems that are not assigned if it's not given and you want to check your solution and you hope the AI knows what the hell it's doing. Anyway, it's really great practice. And I found when I was in graduate school, this is more like what our typical weekly assignment was at the University of Chicago. And it was a real character building experience. But after I solved all those problems, I really felt I knew the material. And if some of you have found this week's homework pretty easy and you want to get on and do some other problems, you can always look ahead to next week. I'll post online soon, but I thought I would go ahead and give you a heads up in case you want to work ahead. It will be due in just 1 week, so that's another reason you might want to get a head start on it. Last time we were getting through this problem, the problem of solving Laplace's equation, del squared phi equals zero, in the interior region of a cube, not a cube, a parallelepiped. Because A, B, and C are not all the same. If they were the same, it would be a cube. So here we had the boundary conditions that phi is zero on all sides, except on the top where it's some specified function. And that's all we're given. And I suggested you make use of a rule of thumb, which is in a problem like this, where you have some flexibility in how you choose your set of separable solutions, you're going to try to use. Yes?
I don't
think you're recording this. Yeah, I think it is. Oh, yeah, I should turn this off. Yeah. Sorry, I should have done that. And then we would all be less confused. But thanks, because now I know I need to turn that off. Actually, I might unplug it too. Make sure we're on the right device here. Yeah, should be good. Okay. So I had suggested this rule of thumb that if you have some surfaces, especially in a Cartesian coordinate system, where you have zero boundary conditions, it's useful to choose this separation constant to be negative. So that's why I've written it as minus alpha squared minus beta squared. It could turn out, as you try to fit all the boundary conditions, you have to revisit this initial choice. But if you pick the right choice at the start, it usually does simplify your algebra. And of course, the sum of the separation constants to satisfy Laplace's equation, because we had, x double prime over x plus y double prime over y plus z double prime over z is zero. The sum of them has to be zero. And so we know the separation constant in z will be this alpha squared plus beta squared. That changes the solution. When it's negative, you get oscillatory solutions that are useful when you want to make a complete set of solutions. When you have a positive separation constant, right, then you get solutions that look more like a rising exponential or a falling exponential or a linear combination like sinh of root alpha squared plus beta squared z or cosh, for instance. In this case, we know z equals zero. We have a phi equals zero boundary condition. So out of these different solutions, clearly we want to use the sinh, and then boom, we've solved a boundary condition. If you didn't see that in your head, you might set up something like a e to the minus square root of that alpha squared plus beta squared z plus b e to the plus, and then find the coefficients a and b to satisfy that boundary condition. But if you know your trig functions and you can jump right to the correct one at the outset, it saves you some lines of algebra. And you probably have already started to see in these homework problems, it's often desirable to save some lines of algebra. So what we have are actually an infinite set of separable solutions. And we've satisfied all the boundary conditions except the one at the top. And now basically none of these is going to have this form at the top, the dependence on x and y. So let's write out the most general form of our separable solutions, linear combination of the separable solutions, and then try to fit match that boundary condition. So it's a sum over m and n. By the way, m and n go from 1 to infinity in these x and y solutions. It's usually important when you write these down to specify the ranges of the index, because sometimes 0 is included, sometimes not. Then we have some unknown constants, which we will try to find later. These normalization constants, the x and y solutions inside, and then finally our z solution, which I'll abbreviate in a shorthand as gamma mn times z, where gamma nn is root alpha, well, m squared, over a squared plus n squared over b squared pi. Okay. And so now the kind of the final step of this deriving the solution inside, we want to pick the AMN to satisfy our last remaining boundary condition. So we demand that this goes as z goes to c to v of xy, which means that we have all of this now, except z has been evaluated at c. And we have on the right-hand side now a function only of x and y. And now we can use the orthonormality of the sine functions over the interval 0 to a and 0 to b, right? Just to remind you what that is. For instance, 0 to a dx of 2 over a sine m pi x over a sine m prime pi x over a, right? That's delta m prime. And we'll do that, basically we'll multiply both sides of this equation times sine of m prime pi x over a and sine n prime pi y over b, and we'll integrate over x and y. 0 to A, 0 to B, both sides of the equation. It's important to note, and a lot of students don't get this right the first time they're doing these kind of problems, that I called these a different letter than the summation index. This is a dummy summation index. I could have called it anything. Sometimes I'll call it houseboat to just illustrate that point. But now I've called the summation indices M and N, and I've chosen some arbitrary member of the complete set to multiply by and integrate that will kill every term in this sum, because this is a Kronecker delta, and the delta NN prime from the B integration of this sum. So this will equal no longer a sum, just simply all of this is the orthonormal function that integrated to 1 for the only non-zero term, m prime equals m and n prime equals n. So this will equal hyperbolic sine of gamma m prime n prime z times a m prime n prime. Okay, so now basically we have solved this. These coefficients you need to complete the solution as in the form of an infinite sum will be this integral here divided by the hyperbolic sine. And it should obey all the boundary conditions. Yes?
I'm not sure I get why did the integration kill the sum?
It did kill the sum. There is no longer a sum.
Yeah, why did the sum go away for each? Because...
Okay, right. When I integrate over x, it's going to kill every term here and replace it by, right, delta mm prime. And then when I summed over m, I'm only going to get the term m prime when m is equal to m prime. And similarly, in the y integration, it'll kill every term except the term where n is equal to n prime. Now there's no sum anymore. Only that one term survived. Yeah. There should be, thanks. Okay, so I think I won't, try to do any more and plug this back in, but here is basically the answer if you need to now calculate this. Now, this was a problem where we were solving Laplace's equation inside, right, del squared phi equals 0. If we had a charge inside, we would have to solve Poisson's equation, right, del squared phi is minus rho over epsilon naught, I think that's right in these units. And so then we would probably need to use the Green's function methods that we will be discussing in more detail in chapter 3. Laplace's equation, just to remind you, is homogeneous, and that changes things a lot. Poisson's equation is inhomogeneous differential equation. But we solved Laplace's equation, the homogeneous partial differential equation with an inhomogeneous boundary condition, where we set phi equal to something on one of the surfaces. Okay, that is basically all I wanted to cover in chapter 2. I wanted to add, you should read the remaining sections on especially 2D problems in chapter 2 that I'm not going to cover in lecture. Okay. Like how you get the electrostatic potential of a line charge, an infinitely long line charge. You can do that by Gauss's law. You probably all did it as undergraduates. And you get a logarithm solution. Okay. On to a meaty chapter, chapter 3. Now we get to go beyond spherical coordinates and beyond Cartesian coordinates. In this chapter, we will encounter spherical polar coordinates and also, I wonder why that light doesn't go off. That seems a bit weird. Okay, I guess the university can afford to buy new bulbs. We'll solve some problems in spherical coordinates and then move on to cylindrical coordinates and Bessel functions. You will enjoy. Okay, so now we're doing more boundary value problems in electrostatics. So, of course, whenever you have a problem of a complicated geometry, it's hugely, hugely advantageous to pick the coordinate system that matches the geometry of your problem as close as possible. So it's at least possible in principle to solve our parallelepiped problem in spherical coordinates. But it's not an easy match. I don't recommend it. Similarly, one could tackle a sphere problem in Cartesian coordinates, but that too is not a great idea. So the main coordinate systems we are using in this course are Cartesian, of course, spherical, polar coordinates, and cylindrical r theta phi form an orthogonal coordinate system, just like x, y, and z, a right-handed orthogonal coordinate system, if you take the coordinates in that order or any cyclic permutation of them. And I think rho phi z, I believe, is the correct right-handed order for cylindrical. So in the back cover of Jackson, you'll find a bunch of formulas that if you don't have a good place to look them up, you can find it inside Jackson. Things like all the vector operators that you'll encounter and need in the course are there: the gradient, the curl, the divergence, and del squared in all those coordinates. Okay, so to tackle Laplace's equation, which I'll do next, in spherical coordinates, you can pull out your chapter of Jackson, or you can memorize del squared phi in these coordinates. And I like to write the del squared in three dimensions a little different than I think Jackson does. I like to write the radial part of the differential operator like 1 over r d squared by dr squared r. of course, acting on phi. And of course, I think the way it's often written is 1 over r squared d by dr, r squared d by dr. You can also write it that way. It's the same operator, if you prefer. Then there's a 1 over r squared sine theta d by d theta sine theta d phi d theta. And there's a 1 over r squared sine squared theta d squared capital phi d phi squared. All that has to equal 0. And this is one of the, I think there are 11 or 12 coordinate systems where the Laplacian, the Laplace equation has separable solutions. Don't think we'll treat others like prolate, spheroidal, or elliptical, polar, cylindrical, all those variations. You can find them in like one of my favorite books, Morse and Feshbach, if you're interested. Okay, so I like to tackle this by looking for separable spherical solutions. In all space is what we are normally having, although you could encounter some problems where you have a wedge or something and the angles are restricted. But let's imagine we're solving this in all space. So we'll set as an ansatz for our separable solution, phi of r theta phi. I like to set this as u of r over r. I often like to write my radial solutions in this form. It's a little different than I think Jackson does it. And then some unknown function of theta, some other unknown function of phi. And now the way we tackle trying to separate variables is, of course, we plug in this ansatz, and usually we divide out the solution. In some cases, you need one or two additional steps to accomplish the separation. So for instance, here, if I just did this, I would have something like u double prime of r over u of r plus 1 over r squared sine theta p prime of theta quantity prime over p of theta plus 1 over r squared sine squared theta q double prime of phi over q of phi. I get an equation something like that. Right, maybe where there's a 1 over r here I left out, which equals 0. And this hasn't quite accomplished what we want. We have a sum of terms, but some of them have mixed coordinates in them. What you're really looking for is to manipulate this type of equation until there's only a function of r, only a function of theta, and only a function of phi. And so first of all, I'll change this equation so it only has a function of phi, and then the remaining stuff only depends on r and theta. And I can accomplish that by multiplying by r squared sine squared theta everything. And now one of the terms has only the phi dependence after this cancels that. in this term. And so I can set Q double prime over Q to be a constant. Here we're going to have single valued boundary conditions if this is solved in all space. So I'm going to anticipate that the separation constant is, we're going to want it probably to be negative. And I will call it minus m squared, this constant, to anticipate that likelihood. Okay. So, well, actually we know what a complete set of solutions here is, right? E to the im phi with m all integers. And if we wanted to make it normalized, we could divide by root 2 pi. So that's our Q of phi. And M, you'll only get single valued solutions, as you've all learned before, I think, if you have M to be an integer. When you let phi go from 0 to 2 pi, you want the solution when you come back to the same point to be the same value in the phi coordinate. So now we can look at the remaining equations. Multiplying this through, now we have the r squared, we have divided by the r, we have u double prime over u of r, we have sine theta times this sine theta p prime prime over p. And now we can replace this q double prime over q by minus m squared, a constant. All that has to equal zero. And let's see, this still had a term sine squared theta in it, didn't it? Right, so if we now divide this term by this equation by sine squared theta everywhere, we'll come to this form. That will have an r-dependent term, and then let me just do that, divide this by sine squared theta here and sine squared theta here. We'll have all this depends on theta only, all this depends on r only. Again, that could only be true if both terms are equal to a constant. So I will equate those constants as sine theta 1 over sine theta, p prime of theta, quantity prime, plus m squared over minus m squared over sine squared theta, p of theta is equal to minus ll plus 1, p of theta. Where I've anticipated the solution by writing the separation constant as L times L plus 1, since that's going to give a very simple form for the index L when we solve this equation. And notice I made this negative separation constant as well, where you'll get oscillatory solutions also in theta. And the radial equation will look like u double prime of r minus ll plus 1 over r squared. U of r is 0. I guess in the notes I called this phi equation, which I have now erased. Oh, here it is. Equation star. I've called the theta equation double star and the radial equation triple star. I've already solved the star, the phi equation. But now, for a given L and M, we can solve the theta equation next. I'm going through this pretty fast. I realize I kind of think you've all seen this probably before. So it's mostly review. But if that's not the case, let me know. I can slow down if anything is unclear. So for any values of these constants that appear in the separation constants, there are, this is the there exist sign, there exist two linearly independent solutions. You expect, because it's a second order differential equation, these are standard solutions in mathematical physics, and they're called associated Legendre functions. One of them is called PLM of cos theta. The other is usually written QLM of cos theta. And you can calculate these if you're using Mathematica, like with this command, Legendre P of LM cosine of theta. Or Q, Legendre Q. So we already found, if we're in all space in phi, that m is an integer in these. And for integer m, only the solutions P, L, M of cos theta are well-behaved at theta equals zero, or usually we call that regular at theta equals zero. In other words, P, that would be PLM of one. Only that is finite QLM of one is not. So PLM is the acceptable solution, but these are only well-behaved also at theta equals pi, only regular at theta equals pi, if L is a non-negative integer, 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on. You can check this yourself. If you're using Mathematica, just plot some up. You can pick M to be an integer, L to be some non-integer, and you'll see it's blowing up, diverging at theta equals pi. So we normally want solutions well-behaved regular over the entire domain. Zero theta is goes from zero to pi. And so these are the allowed values of the separation constant for a problem that covers all 4 pi steradians of space. Any integer m, and, oh, I should add one clarification. Actually, it's not quite precise enough. When I said L is 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on, I should have said for a given m, remember, we're solving the theta equation, the lowest possible value is L equal to absolute value of m. And then it goes through all higher integers. None of you told me that. You should have caught me in that blunder. The Q solutions are sometimes needed, like if someone were to be very perverse and give you a wedge problem like this with phi equals zero boundary conditions or something here on these surfaces, and you don't actually go the whole range in theta or the whole range in phi, then selection of these separation constants could change. Now, this first part of Jackson focuses on azimuthally symmetric problems. So let's, I haven't done the radial equation yet, have I? Well, that's easy enough. I was going to do it later in the notes. Yeah, I guess I'm going to talk about the angular stuff for a while. But if you're hungry and want to know right now, I'll go ahead and write it. The solution of this equation has u of r is equal to r to the l plus 1 or r to the minus l are the two linearly independent solutions of that differential equation. Okay. L is a non-negative separation constant. We wrote the separation constants as L times L plus 1. And actually, it's true that there is, apparently there is a different solution where you can solve this quadratic equation. If I set that to absolute M, for instance, there is another choice. I think it's minus absolute m minus 1 would also work. That turns out to give an irregular Legendre function. So we're picking the positive values of L here. But yeah, that's a good point that in principle, you could solve this equation, or is it m squared? Anyway, with that. But we want L to be non-negative. In order to have these functions that are regular at 0 and pi, it has to be non-negative. Again, you could check that in Mathematica if you want. So let's specialize now to azimuthally symmetric problems. Right, again, azimuthal symmetry means going around the z-axis. Everything's totally symmetric in the geometry of your problem and your boundary conditions. If both of those are azimuthally symmetric, then there is nothing that could invoke a behavior that would have a non-symmetric as I go around. And that means, basically, since our solutions were e to the im phi, that means we're going to look for solutions now to Laplace's or Poisson's equation that are independent of phi. This means m equals zero in our separable solutions will only contribute. And then the for this case, the associated Legendre functions are simpler. And usually written differently, PLM when m goes to 0 of x, which x being cos theta in this case, is usually just written PL of x, which are the Legendre polynomials. These are actually polynomial functions of the argument, which is a little simpler. The PLMs are not really actually polynomials in some cases. So now I have a quick review of some of the properties of Legendre polynomials, which come up so often in this course and in quantum. You really want to know a lot of their properties by hand or by memory. So here is their differential equation, d by dx. Again, x is cos theta here, 1 minus x squared dPL dx plus LL plus 1, PL of x is 0. You can solve this pretty easily, this differential equation, by power series ansatz. It's done usually in the differential equations course. Or like Arfkin and Weber, I think, probably do that if you are taking a math physics course. I gave in the notes how you would solve it in Mathematica, but I think I won't write that out here. But let me just write what a few solutions look like. For instance, P2 of x looks something like, again, these range over the interval minus 1 to 1, and P2 of x looks something like that. Q2 of x, remember, we said was not regular at the boundaries minus 1 and 1. And in fact, it has a logarithmic divergence at the limits. Some things you should know and really should memorize are the first few Legendre polynomials. You should know that P0 of x is 1, that P1 of x is x, and that P2 of x is 3/2 x squared minus 1/2. Of course, there are higher ones, but these come so often into problems. You want to know that right away. If someone hands you x squared, you need to know, boom, that is a linear combination of P0 and P2. Some other properties, the highest power of x in PL of x is x to the L. That's another key property. Another property you should know by heart, especially when you do quantum mechanics, it's really important that the parity operation under x goes to minus x of PL of x is PL of minus x equals PL of x times minus 1 to the L. So the parity operator in quantum language gives minus 1 to the L. A few other things sometimes are useful in solving some problems. Some of the nasty problems in Chapter 3 of Jackson will benefit from knowing the following things. There is something called a Rodriguez formula. Which gives PL of X explicitly as 1 over 2 to the L factorial, the Lth derivative with respect to X of X squared minus 1 to the Lth power. Pretty amazing formula. You can probably imagine there are problems where you have to do an integral and it's useful to plug in this Rodriguez formula and apply the first rule of theoretical physics, which is not differentiate by parts, integrate by parts, yes. There is also orthogonality, might be a little annoying, but the standard normalization of factors chosen in Legendre polynomials are such that they are not orthonormal, but so they are orthogonal, and you'll have to keep track of their normalization integral. Integral of PL of X times PL prime of X for integer L and L prime dx is 2 over 2L plus 1, Kronecker delta, LL prime. And it's not too hard to prove this using Rodriguez formula if you want to do that in your vast spare time. There's also completeness. These are a complete set of functions over minus 1 to 1, in that any well-behaved function can be expanded in terms of them as an infinite series. In other words, for some random nice function over that interval f of x, we could write it as a sum from L equals 0 to infinity constants AL times PL of X. And then we could apply Fourier's trick to find if we are given instead f of X and we want to find the equivalent representation of f of X as an infinite set of constants, instead of knowing f of X at a whole bunch of points, infinite set of points. It's equivalent to knowing that function if we find the coefficients AL, which will be 1 over that normalization constant, and then the integral of PL of X, f of X, dx is the inversion of the infinite sum. There are also a bunch of recurrence relations I wrote in the notes. I don't think I'll write them here. For instance, well, I'll write one of them. The first of four I wrote in the notes is PL plus 1 prime minus PL minus 1 prime is 2L plus 1 PL, for instance. And there are others. You can look them up in also in Wikipedia. You can also see Jackson equation 3.29, I think, gives some others. And you can use these to evaluate integrals that come in and to do some of Jackson's problems, to get the forms they give for the final answer to some of the problems. You might have to sometimes use these tricks to do integrals like this. for different powers of x. Okay, so let's go to solving azimuthal boundary value problems. Okay, so let's look at azimuthal Laplace's equation problems. So we're solving del squared phi equals 0, and we expect by the symmetry of the problem there is no phi dependence. And that in turn means only the m equals zero separable solutions and only the Legendre polynomials are needed in theta. So we can jump to the general form of the solution if we are in all space phi of r theta, then we can add all the separable solutions that had m equals 0. That'll be a sum from L equals 0 to infinity. The sum of the two independent radial solutions for each L. Times the Legendre polynomial of cos theta. And these constants AL and BL have to be found by matching boundary conditions. So an example, first example of this is, let's take a sphere of radius A and suppose someone has specified a potential on the surface as a function of theta. So this is what's given, some v of theta on the surface. And I'm in the notes I even gave one example. You could pick a, you could leave it arbitrary, but I picked this example. Let's pick it to be proportional to cosine squared theta. And now let's find the potential inside and outside of the sphere. This is not a conductor, right? If it was a conductor, the V would be a constant over the conductor, everywhere in the conductor. So think of it as an insulating sphere. Okay, so we have to think about solving Laplace's equation with that boundary condition. And we also, of course, in addition to matching that theta dependence on the sphere, we have to satisfy these boundary conditions that phi, as r goes to the origin, the potential should remain finite. Of course, if there were a charge at the origin, we'd have to revisit that. But we haven't put any charges out there except the ones that were needed to make the potential on the sphere have this value. So phi has to be finite at the origin. It also needs, as our usual convention for finite charge distributions, it should go to zero at infinity, is another boundary condition. Again, this boundary condition can only be demanded for finite charge distributions or finite conductors with a specified potential. Here we have it, right? Only some charge somehow was on this sphere that made it have this weird, this cos squared theta potential. So that was somehow a finite distribution. But a common problem is an infinite wire of charge, infinitely long. And there you'll find potentials that are not zero at infinity for problems like that. Well, that actually is very simple to satisfy these boundary conditions. It just means that BL, at least the first step in the radial part of the solution, is that BL must be zero for the inside part, right? Because r to the minus l minus 1 for all non-negative l, that's irregular at r equals 0. And similarly, for the outside solution, none of these r to the l are vanishing at infinity, and so all the al are 0 outside. So we only have one set of either BL or AL to find, and then we'll be done. And we'll find those based on the given V of theta on the surface of the sphere. Is really working. Just double check. Yes. Okay. Okay, so we have two different expressions, phi inside of r and theta, sum over l equals 0 to infinity. AL r to the L PL of cos theta and phi outside sum from L equals 0 to infinity BL over r to the L plus 1 PL of cos theta. There is no dipole layer here, so phi is continuous. At the surface of the sphere. But you could solve this problem with a dipole layer. I'm not going to do that now, though. Okay. But that means phi inside at A for all theta must equal V of theta, and that also must equal phi outside of A and theta. And so now we can find those coefficients AL and BL by, again, what Griffiths calls Fourier's trick. We equate. We use the orthogonality of the Legendre functions. So in other words, we'll set sum over L of AL, little a to the L, PL of cos theta to equal V naught cos squared theta. We can multiply both sides by PL prime of cos theta, like I did before, to eliminate the infinite sum, and integrate. That'll kill every term in the sum except the L prime term. So if I call again, x is cos theta, I'm multiplying minus 1 to 1 dx pl prime of x, sum over L al a to the L pl of x. And that should equal v naught integral minus 1 to 1 pl prime of x times x squared dx. You could actually do these steps just by noticing that this is v naught x squared and remembering, oh, x squared is a linear combination of p naught and p2. Okay, but of course it will come out from this algebra. It just takes about four more lines of algebra. But you expect the final answer should only have p0 and p2 in it. If you remember that p2 of x is quadratic and p0 of x is 1. So, etc., etc., etc. In other words, I'm claiming x squared is 2 thirds p2 plus 1 third p0. So if we write it that way, we can basically jump to the solution. And we get that a2 is 2 thirds v0 over a squared. A0 is 1 third of v0. These are the only non-zero coefficients inside, and the only coefficients outside. There's a 2 fifths b2, a to the minus 3 is v0 4 fifteenths, and b2, sorry, or b2 is 2 thirds a cubed v0, and b0 is one-third AV naught. So I skipped some algebra, but this is all just straightforward algebra. And so finally we have, all right, the final solutions are phi inside depends only on r and theta as advertised. It's azimuthally symmetric, so no phi dependence. Has a one-third V naught and a two-thirds v naught r over a squared p2 of cos theta, and phi outside is v naught over 3a over r plus 2v naught over 3a cubed over r cubed p2 of cos theta. And that's the final solution. Okay, next example. How we can use these Legendre solutions. In another problem, let's say, let's do, find the potential everywhere for the following situation. Let's pick another azimuthally symmetric problem. And we're going to make use of the fact that for regions of space where there is no charge, then we're solving Laplace's equation. And we can write those in terms of Legendre polynomials. So that means phi of r theta is what we wrote before, assuming theta covers the whole range, has no wedge or something to restrict the angles, sum over L, again, meaning 0 to infinity. The solution regular at small distances plus the solution regular at large distances, and a Legendre polynomial. And if you can evaluate by some method, maybe it's simpler, to evaluate the solution in a azimuthally symmetric problem just along the z-axis, then you can use the following trick to get the solution everywhere. And I'll show you for a specific case how that works, and then that'll be, I think you'll see how to generalize it to any other problems of this class. I think I need to change chalk. Okay. So the idea is basically if you know this and then you'll equate it to, let's say if it's along the positive z-axis, you know this potential along this line, right? You can equate that to sum over L AL R to the L plus BL R to the minus L minus 1 times PL of 1, which is 1 for all L. So if you can find phi and write it as a power series, then you'll find it for all others by simply changing PL of 1 into PL of cos theta, and you'll have the solution. That's the basic logic of this idea. So let's do a concrete case. Let's take a charged ring in the XY plane. Okay, so we have a charged ring of total charge Q and radius A in the XY plane. So to get the potential anywhere in space, of course, we could do the integral over this ring, add up all the elements dQ, each of which makes a potential at some observation point P. But we're not going to do that here. We're going to do a simpler argument. We are going to first just calculate the potential along the z-axis, which you can do really by inspection, because every point on the ring is the same distance away from the z-axis. So I'm claiming just by inspection phi of r when it's along the z-axis has to equal q over 4 pi epsilon naught root r squared plus a squared. Is that clear to everyone? You could do that in your head. So to get it in this form, though, where we can use this trick, we'll need a power series expansion into powers of that square root. Okay. And so let's look first at radii r greater than a. Okay, so imagine a sphere of radius a. Outside of this sphere, we're going to try to make the potential and write it as a sum of powers of R. By doing, and how do we do that? We'll do a second law of theoretical physics. We'll do a binomial expansion of that potential we found on the z-axis. So I claim to do a binomial expansion along this point, it's helpful to rewrite this to factor out the larger of the two numbers in the binomial inside the square root. So we'll have q over 4 pi epsilon naught r after factoring out an r. And now we'll have 1 plus a squared over r squared to the minus 1/2 power. Now we can use the binomial expansion. Don't forget, whenever you do the binomial expansion, usually you have 1 plus something. And that something had better have absolute value less than 1. That's why for r greater than a, I factored out r. To do r less than a, which would be inside the sphere, I would need to factor out a. And then I would have 1 plus r squared over a squared, and I do a binomial expansion of that. But right now I'm doing the outside region. So this will look like q over 4 pi epsilon naught r. Hopefully you all can do this binomial in your head for at least the first three terms. 1 minus 1/2 times a squared over r squared. The next term is minus 1/2 times minus 1/2 minus 1, which is minus 3/2 over 2 factorial a squared over r squared squared. Okay, and you can keep going if you like, but I'll stop there. And now that gives q over 4 pi epsilon naught r times 1 minus 1/2 a squared over r squared plus 3/8 a to the fourth over r to the fourth minus 15 for 48 a sixth over r to the sixth and so on. And the idea is we see this has the form sum over L BL over R to the L plus 1. And you can simply read off the BL from this expansion, which are only for the even powers of L. And then you simply will tack on a P2 of cos theta, a P4 of cos theta, a P6 of cos theta, and we'll have the solution in an infinite series expansion for all theta for r outside the sphere. Okay, sorry, I went a minute over time. I better stop before you shoot me. Have a good day.